So I originally put this together as the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and then realized there's more people involved, like Naradas Das Thakur and Lokanath, and it was going to be, you know, a three-hour slideshow, and very little you would retain. So we just thought we'd fit it between RT and the yoga class, which is a half an hour. And so last week we just took one, Lokanath Das, and it was perfect. It was just right for the time slot. So today I think we'll just do one. I prepared one on both Rupa and Sanatan. And if it doesn't quite last half an hour, we can always just do some kirtan or something like that. But these are the two brothers who became the followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm not sure I can read all these things because I couldn't find a pair of glasses. But I'll see if I can read all the notes. We'll start with Sanatan Goswami. He was the older brother. They were both known as Amara and Santosh Dev. They were the prime minister and finance minister of Hussein Shah, who was the Mughal ruler of Bengal. They had been sort of impressed into service by the Mughals, and that basically relegated them to a fallen classification of Hindus, although they were very high-born Hindus, because they were engaged in the service of the Muslims. That pretty much put them out of any known position or part of Hindu society as it was structured in those days. And in fact, they had taken Muslim names. I forget what they were. I think they might be in the next slide here. But their Hindu names are Amara and Santosh Dev. They were the prime minister. Sanatan Goswami was the prime minister, and Rupa Goswami was the finance minister of Hussein Shah, Bengal. And they had written Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to deliver them. They had made their home in Ramakeli, and they were fabulously wealthy. I mean, Bengal was just unbelievably wealthy. And they were the prime minister and the finance minister, and basically Hussein Shah, he just liked honey, and he entrusted the whole affair of this fabulously wealthy nation into their care. He completely trusted them. They themselves, whenever they weren't governing the affairs of the state of Bengal, they were reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Even Rupa Goswami had already started writing poetry about Krishna and Radha and the loving affairs of the gopis. And in their home at Ramakeli, they had made it like a duplicate Vrindavan. They had tried to, just like we're trying to do here with peacocks and cows, and beautifying the landscape. So when people come on the property, they actually feel what it's like to be in the spiritual world. So Rupa and Sanatan Goswami made their home in Ramakeli just like a duplicate Vrindavan. And they were absorbed in pastimes of Krishna whenever they weren't ministering and governing. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was on his way to Vrindavan, but he told his retainers that he was going to take a little detour. It turned out it was a long detour. Actually, Ramakeli was not at all on the way to Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya went way out of his way to go to Ramakeli, and everybody was wondering, what's the big deal in Ramakeli? Well, that's where Rupa and Sanatan were staying, and they had written to Lord Chaitanya to please come and deliver them. So it's explained that Lord Chaitanya already recognized Rupa and Sanatan as his eternal associates from the spiritual world, as great devotees, and so he wanted to see them. It's said that when Krishna appeared to Dhruva Maharaj, Krishna didn't appear to Dhruva Maharaj to give Dhruva his darshan, but Krishna appeared to Dhruva Maharaj to get the darshan of his own pure devotee. And it said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went way out of his way, took a big detour to Ramakeli, not to give darshan to Rupa and Sanatan, but to get their darshan. The Lord has six offenses: wealth, strength, beauty, fame, knowledge, and renunciation or humility. So this is an exhibition of his humility. He's not coming to give them his darshan, but he's mad after his devotees, and he's coming to get their darshan, kind of a reunion, because they are eternal associates in the spiritual world. So Sanatan Goswami was born Amara Day. He was born in 1465. He met Lord Chaitanya in 1514, which was 5 years after Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas. Sanatan Goswami, or Amara Day at that time, was educated by his grandfather, Mukunda Dutt, who held a high position in Hussein Shah's government. And through his grandfather, Hussein Shah, came to know about these two talented brothers, Sanatan and Rupa Goswami. He studied under Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Remember, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the one who took Lord Chaitanya to his home in Jagannath Puri. And for 7 days he read to him or recited him Mayavadi philosophy. He thought that he was such a young, good-looking sannyasi, and because he fainted unconscious at the sight of Lord Jagannath, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought he was too much on the sentimental platform and he would not be able to maintain his celibacy and his renunciation unless he was philosophically grounded. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest teacher of the day in Bengal, and he took it upon himself to try to teach, inculcate Lord Chaitanya philosophy. And thus he recited Mayavadi philosophy to him for 7 days, at the end of which he said, Sarvabhauma said, I've been talking for 7 days and you haven't said anything, you haven't acknowledged anything. Is there a reason behind that? He says, do you understand the Vedas? And Lord Chaitanya said, I understand the Vedas very well, but what you've just spoken to me, the 7 days, is not the Vedas. It's an indirect, impersonalistic, monistic interpretation of the Vedas. And Sarvabhauma said, what do you mean? And then Lord Chaitanya began to explain. And Sarvabhauma became one of the greatest followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as well as all of his disciples. And Sarvabhauma was a great friend of Advaitacharya because they were both like a senior citizen, you might say. So it was that Sarvabhauma under whom Sanatan Goswami studied. He knew several languages, including Parsi and Arabic. His Diksha Guru was Vidyavas Chashpati. There was an instance when Hussein Shah had hired a stone mason to build a temple or a mosque. I think it was a mosque or something. And as the building was nearing completion, the Shah said to the sculptor, he said, well, what do you think about this? And the stone mason said, well, I'm very proud of my work, but I can do something even better. He was trying to get more business. It had the opposite effect. Hussein Shah said, because you haven't given me your best already, I'm going to throw you off the roof and kill you. And he said, but because this is a nice temple, the Muslims weren't known for their, like, delicacy. Because nice temple, he said, I'll give you one wish before I throw you off the roof. And then I think he said he wished that it be named after him or something. It wasn't a temple, it was a mosque. So the work became uncompleted. And Sanatan sent someone, he sent a replacement stonemason to that area. I think it was called, he sent to Muragram, the village of Muragram. And Hussein Shah said, what is this? Why are you guys here? And they said, Amar Day told us that you need someone, and he sent it. And then he was so impressed with, because a good servant, a good son, let's start this way. A bad servant or a bad son, when you ask them to do something, they don't do it. They just slough it off. A less bad son, you ask them to do something, they do it, but they do it kind of like grudgingly, not willingly. A good son, you ask them to do it, and they do it willingly. But the best son, he anticipates your desire, he anticipates your needs, and he does it, you don't even have to ask him. So the same Shah was so impressed that Sanatan Goswami had already sent the substitute stonemason intimating what had happened already. And so then he called him and he made him prime minister. And his Muslim name was Shakara Malik. And his brother, who was also called, who was the finance minister and the private secretary of the Hussein Shah, was called Dabir Kash. And these were their Muslim names. And from the point of view of Hindu society, they were considered fallen. That wasn't natural. Originally, the caste system is described by Lord Krishna as being determined. One's caste is determined by character and training. There's nothing that says birth determines what caste you fit into. It's by training and by aptitude. But in those days, if a Muslim would come up and drink from a water cup and then just sprinkle on the head of a Hindu, then he would be cast out of Hindu society. It may not have been right, but that's just the way things were that in those days. So certainly working for the Muslims, conversing with them day by day, these brothers sort of had a fallen condition. Even though they were brilliant linguists, they were brilliant organizers in every way. And they themselves being very humble, they also thought of themselves as being very fallen. Probably they thought of themselves as being more fallen than they were even perceived by others in their humility. So as I mentioned, they read the Bhagavatam daily and they made their home in Ramakeli just like Vrindavan. And they served the Shah Hussein. But King Pratibharudra and Arisa, who was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, was attacked by Hussein Shah. Arisa is the next state down from Bengal. And so wanting to expand, Hussein Shah sent his armies into Arisa and attacked Arisa. And Arisa is the home of Lord Jagannath. And Arisa is where Lord Chaitanya made his home after sannyas. So this was just unbearable. This was a huge offense in the minds of Rupa and Sanatan. And when Hussein Shah attacked the kingdom of Lord Jagannath and King Pratibharudra, who was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, then they couldn't take it anymore. And they pretty much decided that they were going to give up the service of Hussein Shah. And Rupa snuck off. He snuck off. Next week we'll talk about Rupa. He took a boat full of gold coins that he'd earned as his salary while he was the finance minister. And he took care of his family and he divided it in an exemplary way. And then he just went to connect up with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Sanatan was left. And Sanatan at first feigned illness. He said that he was ill, too ill to come in. And for many days, he didn't show up for work. But what he was actually doing was he was surrounding himself with great devotees and Brahmins, and he was reading the Bhagavatam and absorbing himself deeply in the pastimes of Krishna's loving affairs. And finally, the Hussein became concerned. He knew Rupa had already absconded. So he sent a physician to examine Sanatan Goswami and found nothing physically wrong with him. Then the Hussein himself came to see what was up with Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan didn't mince words. He characteristically just spoke straightforward to the Hussein Shah and said, "Now I have a different master. I'm no longer interested in you being my master. I have a different master. I'm surrendered at the feet of my Lord. I shall take orders from him and serve him and no one else. Kindly excuse me." So, because Hussein Shah had basically left everything in his hands. He had trusted within. I mean, he probably didn't even know what was going on. He trusted Sanatan Goswami so much. He didn't accept that, and he jailed him, hoping that the rigorous conditions in the jail would cause him to change his mind. In the jail, Sanatan was just thinking how he could get out and join Lord Chaitanya. The jailer was a man named Sikh Habu, and Sanatan Goswami bribed him with many, 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 many golden coins. And the jailer said, "It doesn't matter how many golden coins you give me. When I explain that I let you escape, the Hussein is going to cut off my head." So Sanatan was a diplomat and he was very clever. He said, "Well, don't tell him I escaped. Just, there was once a day they could go to the river and do their ablutions and then we'd come back to jail. Just tell him that I fell in or I jumped in and the tide got me and I drowned. And just tell him that." And so they thought that would be a good story. And he took his fortune of gold coins from Sanatan Goswami and he let Sanatan Goswami go. And Sanatan Goswami was traveling to meet Lord Chaitanya, and he came to one place where he needed to be escorted over some hills at nighttime. He's always trying to evade the troops of the Hussein. They're looking for him everywhere. And so he comes to a community of sort of people that live on the fringe. They're sort of honest, but sort of dishonest. And he stays at an inn there, and he asks if he can get passage the next day over this mountain range. And the innkeeper is very, very, I think it's called lugubrious. He's very hospitable. He's very kind. He says, "Okay." He says, "You won't have to pay anything. We'll just do it," and so on and so on. And he's so lugubrious that Sanatan is a little suspicious. He's a little suspicious. And he says to his servant, Ishana, he says, "Are you carrying any gold?" And what actually happened is this innkeeper, he was very used to robbing travelers. And he knew how to detect if they had any money. And he had an astrologer. And the astrologer looked at the stars and did whatever he did. And he told the innkeeper that they are carrying 8 golden coins. And then Sanatan Goswami, he asked his servant, "Are you carrying golden coins?" And his servant said, "Yes." And Sanatan said, "How many?" He said, 7. He lied. So Sanatan said, "Give them to me." And he gave the 7 golden coins to the innkeeper. And the innkeeper said, "It's good that you did that, because we were going to kill you for those. We were going to take you out in the night and we were going to kill you, because I already knew that you had gold coins." And so he did escort him then over the mountains and all. And after they came through the mountains, Sanatan turned to his servant, Isha, and he said, "Do you still have any coins?" And Isha said, "Yes, I have 1. So then he said, "You take your coin and you go." And the servant was just devastated. He began to cry. He said, "You're serving the gold and I'm serving God. So we cannot continue to travel together. You go, you serve gold, and I'll go and I'll serve God." So then he stopped in to see his family members, and he had nothing. He was destitute. He was, he'd been going through the jungle in his bare feet, hardly eating anything. He lost a lot of weight, and he wouldn't accept anything, any money or any help, just a meal. But his brother-in-law had a nice blanket, and he said, "Please at least take this one blanket to keep you warm when you're evading the Shah's troops and you're traveling all this mileage to join up with Lord Chaitanya." So he took one blanket. And then he finally came to where Lord Chaitanya was staying in Kasi. Kasi is the name for Banaras, modern-day Banaras. And he stayed outside the door because, again, they felt themselves polluted. They felt themselves, because they were serving the Muslims, they felt in a very, very humble state of mind. So he didn't announce himself. This was formerly the prime minister, but he didn't announce. He just stayed outside the door. But Lord Chaitanya, he was inside, and he immediately knew that Sanatan Goswami was out the door. So he stopped the conversation going. He walked out and he just took a look at the blanket. He just stopped a little bit, just like a hitch a little bit. He looked at the blank and then he embraced Sanatan Goswami like that. But Sanatan Goswami knew from that little hitch at the Lord that he wasn't pleased, that he's taken the renounced sort of life and he has this fancy expensive blanket on. So as soon as they had their reunion and so on and so forth, and he was free, he slipped out, he went to the beach, and he found a beggar with a just ratty, holy blanket, and he said, "I'd like to exchange my blanket for yours." And the beggar said, don't play with me. I mean, I know I'm, skinny and I'm dirty and everything, but, don't make fun of me, I'm a human being. So I said, "No, I'm not making fun of you. I really wanted to." He says, Here, if I give you the blanket, will you give me yours?" And he gave him the blanket. And then he came back, and this time Lord Chaitanya smiled at him. Now, he never said anything, but he smiled at him in such a way, "This is very good." Because it's not congruous for a renunciate to have a very, very fancy blanket. This is before he changed the blankets, obviously, like that. So in Kasi, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent 2 months instructing Sanatan Goswami about bhakti yoga. And then he told him to join Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami had already met Lord Chaitanya, and he'd already gone, and he was already in Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatan Goswami, after 2 months of instructions, "You please go and you join your brother Rupa in Vrindavan." This is also another diorama of Lord Chaitanya. This is the Ganges River, which runs through Banaras also. So as Sanatan Goswami made his way, it's still about 1,000 miles to Vrindavan, he got this skin condition. He got a very, very bad skin condition. I think he missed his brother Rupa. Rupa had already been in Vrindavan and went back to visit Lord Chaitanya once more in Puri. And so Sanatan Goswami also... once he traveled through Jagannath and forth. Yeah, he went back to Jagannath Puri after 1 year in Vrindavan. And in his course of going back to Jagannath Puri or Nilachala, he got this infection, some kind of eczema, boils and all kinds of seeping, pussy scabs were coming from his skin. And he came to Jagannath Puri, and again, he didn't want to announce himself. Lord Chaitanya came out and embraced him. And he was so embarrassed because Lord Chaitanya was getting some of this yellow ooze on his body, and he said, "Don't embrace me." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Don't be ridiculous." He gave the example, a mother doesn't really mind the stool of the baby. In fact, the mother relishes it because of love. So he says, "I don't mind, you know, this at all." So Sanatana Goswami, again, because he'd associated so much with the Muslims, he didn't think himself worthy to enter the Jagannath Puri temple. So he lived with Haridas Thakur, who had been born a Muslim, and Haridas Thakur was not allowed to enter the Jagannath temple. In fact, even today, the devotees of the ISKCON movement, as of this date, in 2010, we can't go into the Puri temple either, just because of our white skin. And so, in those days, anyone that was born a Muslim or had contact with the Muslims was also prohibited from going into the Jagannath Puri temple. So Haridas Thakur, it was ironic, because he's the Namacharya. He's the one that chants 300,000 rounds a day. And he couldn't go to the temple. But he had a little hut so that he could see the chakra, the dome on top of the temple. And it's considered that if on any given day you can't go to the temple, if you just look at the chakra, that's as good as going to the temple. So he was seeing the chakra from his little hut. Sanatana was living with him. And even though social custom prohibited them from going to the temple and seeing Lord Jagannath, Lord Jagannath, in the form of Lord Chaitanya, came to visit them every day. So they couldn't see Jagannath, so Jagannath came to see them. And he would bring them prasadam. And then he was always embracing Sanatana. And Sanatana was just like, "I'm going to go to hell, you know, for you know, having the pus from my body touching Lord." So he decided he was going to commit suicide. That rather than continually offend Lord Chaitanya by getting embraced by him, he decided he was going to commit suicide. And Lord Chaitanya heard about that. He heard about that. And he came to him and he argued in a couple of really interesting ways. He said, if Krishna could be attained by suicide, who would not do it 1,000 times? If it was that easy to become Krishna conscious, you know, I would be shoving you out of the way to do it myself. You know, if that's all it took to become Krishna conscious, I would do it 1,000 times. But it's not the way to become Krishna conscious. And then another thing is, he said, anyway, you can't commit suicide because I own your body. Your body is my personal property. And so you can't do anything to that body except what I want you to do. And I have already mapped out for you your whole life. You're going to back to Vrindavan, excavate the holy places, and write literatures and establish the principles of bhakti. And so he kept Sanatana Goswami with him in Jagannath Puri for another 6 months. And then, just before Sanatana Goswami left for Vrindavan, finally Lord Chaitanya embraced him one more time and all of his skin problems disappeared. They all cleared up. He went to Vrindavan, and he developed a historical relationship with a deity called Madan Gopal. Vrindavan is, today, Vrindavan is known as the town of 5,000 temples. There are only about 50,000 people who live in Vrindavan, and there are 5,000 temples. So that's what, one temple every 10 people? There are many, many temples in Vrindavan. And many, many Krishna deities, obviously. And everyone wears tilak, and everyone has japa beads. Even the people that smoke, there's not many of them, but even the ones that smoke will have a cigarette in one hand, japa beads in the other. It's not a common sight. It's very incongruous, which is probably why you remember it, you know. But everybody is a Krishna devotee. Everyone wears tilak and dhoti. Sanatana Goswami, Krishna's one, but he can appear in so many different forms according to the love of the devotee. So Sanatana Goswami, something happened between him and this Madan Gopal deity. He went to this household, Madan Chobe's family. Madan Chobe was a wealthy merchant, and they had this Krishna deity in their home that they'd been worshipping for many years. And they were all pure devotees, and their son, the son's name was Sadhana. And the Krishna deity, this Madan Gopal deity, and Sadhana would go out and play. He'd just get off the altar, and he'd go out and play in the backyard. He'd play with the son Sadhana. So they're all pure devotees. They all have that vision of love. And Sanatana would go once in a while, and he was just like so attracted to Madan Gopal. And yet he thought, this is ridiculous because, I mean, look at, he's playing with the sun. You know, that's how, that's, you know, these people are on that kind of a level with the deity. I mean, I should just forget about it, you know, forget about it, you know. But as the sun grew up and as the years passed, the deity just became like, you know, he became more and more restless and less easily appeasable. You know, it's kind of like you get a child who gets into his teens and he wants to leave home, you know. So the deity, you know, and these are all pastimes because actually Madan Gopal knew from the very beginning that he was going to go with Sanatana Goswami. But he's just acting out these pastimes and becoming restless and a little bit more agitated and harder to please. So finally in a dream, he finally came to Chob's wife and he said, I want to go with Sanatana Goswami. I want to go with Sanatana Goswami. So what can you do? You know, the Lord orders you and so you go. So Sanatana Goswami, again, he was a renunciate. And renunciates, you know, they don't have kitchens and they don't have storerooms, they don't have pantries, they don't have spices. They don't even know whether they're going to eat on a given day. And he's wandering throughout the forests of Vrindavan. One famous statement about all six Goswamis was they never lived twice in the same, they never spent the night twice in the same place. They would live under trees and they would move from tree to tree. So it was never to be attached. They're just like Indradumna Swami came, he only stayed a short time. Well, this Goswami wouldn't even stay 3 days in one place. They would just sleep under a different tree every night. And so a lot of times they would just take some leaves and some water, make a little fire, boil the leaves and drink the water. That was their meal for the day. Because there weren't so many householders. Vrindavan, when they were renovating it and excavating it, it was just jungle. So it wasn't like you could even go begging because there were very few householders. In those days, it wasn't a town of 50,000 people with just little things here and there. They were the ones that were actually making it the town of 50,000 people with 5,000 temples. And so after a while, the deity is saying, look, you know, you're just giving me this water, this leaf water. I don't even know what it is. It could be poison ivy or, I mean, I don't even know what, you know. Couldn't you at least like put a little salt in it or something? It's just tasteless. So they would go back and forth like this, you know. It's love, you know. If you have a really good friend, you're polite to strangers and acquaintances. You're, you know, faultlessly polite to all kinds of people. It's an ethic, especially with Americans. Americans are very polite to each other. But when you have a special friend and you're together, you find more relish in kind of insulting each other, isn't it? You find more relish in insulting it. You find it's more pleasurable to kind of insult them, you know what I'm saying, than it is to just be polite. It shows a greater depth and greater intensity and greater thickness of a relationship. If you can insult and enjoy it, if you insult someone and they take offense, then you know you might have thought they were a friend, but now you just realize all of a sudden they're not as good a friend as you thought. See what I'm saying? So here they're going back and forth, you know. He says, salt. And he says, why don't you give me salt? And he says, well, why don't you give me a break? You know, do you want me to be renunciate or what? Well, you want me to get married, get a wife, get a cow, get a house? Is that what you want? You know, I thought you wanted me to renounce and excavate and move around and find the holy places and write books and stuff. Well, I can't do both. You know, I can't give you salt and do what you want me to do. And so this went on and on and on. And then finally Sanatana said, he said, look, you're God. You're God. You can make your own arrangements, you know. You don't need me to give you salt. You're the Supreme Personality of God. So then Madan goes, okay, all right, I'll do it. And this is what happened. This is what he did. There was a very, very rich merchant named Ram Das Kapoor, and his boat was going down the Yamuna River, and it got stuck in a sandbar, and it was in danger of capsizing, and it was losing all of the merchandise that was on board. And so Ram Das Kapoor, he said, oh my God, if this boat capsizes, I'm going to be ruined. I'm going to lose everything. And he's on the shore, and the boat's tipping over and all like that. And he says, oh my gosh, you know, God, if you save me, I'll give 10% of the value of this cargo. I'll give 10% of the value of this cargo. And so a little boy, a little charming boy with a peacock feather in his hair and a flute stuck in his belt walks up and he says, I know someone that can help you out. He says, tell me, can you lead me? So he led him to the ashram where Sanatan Goswami is saying. And then he said, you please come and give me your advice on this situation. So he brought Sanatan, and Sanatan said, you have to do this and this and this and this, and then the boat will float. So he did this and this and this, and of course Krishna is like, you know, God, so he's working it all out anyway. And the boat floated, and he saved his cargo. And then he was so happy, he gave all the profit. In fact, he was so happy that not only did he give 10%, but he gave all the profit that he made from all his business endeavors for the whole year to build a temple for Madan Gopal. And that temple is called, changed his name from Madan Gopal to Madan Mohan. So it's the Madan Mohan temple. And the deity was installed there. Sanatan Goswami did the installation. He arranged for Brahmins. And then he was free to visit the temple whenever he wanted. But he was also free to travel. And Vrindavan is quite a large area. And finding all the places of Krishna's pastimes involved a lot of travel and renunciation. So that was... And this is the temple here. There's a Parikram path that goes around Vrindavan. If you ever go there, that's one of the first things you want to do is walk around the path. I forget how long it is. It takes about 4 hours. And this is right on the Parikram path. And it's declared a national historical site. It's not an active temple. But it is a shrine. It's a monument. And this is the Madan Mohan temple in Vrindavan. So one time, it was Sanatan Goswami's birthday. And Rupa Goswami wanted to do something for his birthday. He thought, it'd be nice if I could, you know, get something other than boiled leaves, you know, for my brother and his birthday. And he was thinking like that, and then he just dismissed the thought. He said, well, I really haven't got the means, and so just forget about it, you know. And then, no sooner had he done that, than a beautiful little village girl came by, and she had all these preparations. And she said, someone in the village heard that it was your brother's birthday, yada, 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 so my mother made these in here. And then Rupa Goswami came to visit his brother later on the day, and Sanatan said, Sanatan came to visit Rupa, and he said, here's, and Sanatan said, where did you get all this? And he said, well, a charming little girl from the village brought it. And he said, that was Radharani. That was Radharani. And he chastised his brother. He said, we're supposed to be serving God. We're not supposed to be taking service from God. And that's our principle, basically, that we don't ask what God can do for us, but we ask what we can do for God. That's the higher intensity of love, of devotional service. So one time, also on another occasion, Rupa wrote, and these Goswamis, they were seeing the pastimes of Krishna in their mind's eye. They were living them, they were participating. You'll find that the literature of the Goswamis is actually dangerous for a neophyte. Because there's the danger that if you haven't read the Gita, if you haven't read the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you're not in the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, if you go to the literature of the Goswamis, there's a danger of taking Krishna's pastimes too cheaply. Because you have to understand, first of all, how God is great. If you just go right to the pastimes and the descriptions of Krishna, you'll superimpose upon it our own lusts, our own desires, our own appetites, you see. We'll see it through that lens. And that's why we have to purify ourselves by following the process of nectar devotion, Chaitanya Charita, first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. It's like when we offer arti. We don't offer to the face of the Lord. The loving pastimes of the Lord like the face of the Lord. We don't offer to the face of the Lord initially. We offer to the feet of the Lord, ankles, knee, thigh, and then we go up to the face. So when we approach Krishna, we don't just go to these pastimes, but we go to the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and we do it under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. So when we finally touch upon those literatures of the Goswami, we understand that these are nothing material, and this is nothing to do with mundane, lusty, loving affairs. It's all transcendental. In fact, it's the emblem of perfection. But unless we have eyes purified by the salve of love, we can misjudge and underestimate these pastimes. So in any case, with that, having said that, one of Rupa's poems, and next week we'll talk about Rupa, who was a prolific So I'll just continue? Okay. I wasn't sure we'd go half an hour, and already we're more than half an hour. Rupa was a prolific poet. Okay, great. Wonderful. And one time Rupa wrote in one of his poems that Radharani's ponytail, sometimes she wears a ponytail, was like a snake. And the words for that, her veini was like a nagina. And Sanatan saw it. Whoa, wait a minute. That's going too far. And the next day, Sanatan was walking on the road, and he saw some girls playing in the distance, and he saw one of the girls with her back turned, and he saw what he thought was a snake. And he went running up to warn her, "Oh, little girl, there's a snake about to bite you." And then when he got closer, he saw it was a ponytail. So it was just God's way of showing him that actually what Rupa had written was not fanciful, it wasn't imagination. That's actually what he saw in Krishna Leela, in Krishna's pastimes. And it was being verified for Sanatan himself. This is a famous story. In fact, if we ever get any actors, we'll do this drama. It's called The Drama of the Touchstone. There was one young man, he wanted to be wealthy, and his name was Jivana. He wasn't originally Thakur. And he went to Kasi, went to Benares, and he prayed to Lord Shiva for relief from poverty. He wanted money. So Lord Shiva came to him and said, "Go to Vrindavan and seek shelter of Sanatan, and Sanatan will remove your poverty." So Jivana went there, and he went to where Sanatan was staying, and he said, "I hear you have something that can remove my poverty." And Sanatan said, "I really don't know what you're talking about." "No, I did. Lord Shiva told me you have something to remove your poverty." And Sanatan, "Oh, okay, I think I know what he's... He says, "If you go in the back and root through the garbage, I think there's a touchstone there." "Yeah. Yeah, I remember now. Yeah, I think that's where I put it, you know." So Jivana went through, and he found this stone. And then he touched it. He touched it to a pot, and the pot turned to gold. And he touched it to a stone, and so here's the legendary touchstone. And my gosh. And he's just like so excited. "I'm going to become the richest man in the world. I'll have a house. I'll have a diary for a beautiful bride. I'll have so many." And he's just going down the mountain, and he's just like, and then he said, wait a minute. Why did Sanatan have this in the garbage? I know why. He had this in the garbage. Only reason is because he had something much more valuable. Something much more valuable and temporary wealth. So he went back to Sana and he said, "Look, I figured it out. I figured you're just trying to get rid of me, aren't you? You got something much more valuable than this touchstone." And Sanatan kind of, you know, that kind of like that. And he says, "What do I have to do?" And he says, "First of all, you have to throw your touchstone in the moving river and get rid of it." So he did that, and then Sanatan initiated him into the Hare Krishna mantra. He whispered into his right ear, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then he became such a great devotee, this wealth seeker, you know, this kami, someone who's full of material desires, like Dhruva Maharaj is a kami, full of material desire. He became a great devotee. And indeed, he got a much greater treasure. And he became known as Jivana Thakur. Thakur means a very, very learned person. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed away in 1533. And then many, many Vaishnavas. See, Chaitanya was in Puri, and he was the big draw in Puri. Puri is on the west, east coast of India. Vrindavan is way towards the west. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed away, then immediately so many devotees went to Vrindavan. Because they were no longer held in Puri. And so many devotees. So their work was assisted. The excavation and renovation was assisted. There are many, many devotees. And a whole new generation of younger devotees. Now, Sanatan Goswami's habit was he circumambulated Govardhan Hill daily. There's one parikram around Vrindavan. And that's just, I don't know, 8-10 kilometers. It takes like 3 hours or so. But then there's another parikram around Govardhan Hill. And that's 25 kilometers. That's about 15 miles. So he used to go around Govardhan Hill every day. He used to do that as his regular daily practice. And during the course of doing all of his chanting and his writing, he not only wrote many books himself, which we'll list for you later, but he supervised many books by Rupa, by Gopal Bhatta, Raghunath Bhatta, Raghunath Das, and Jiva Goswami, who are the other five Goswamis in Vrindavan. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him many, many years previously, "You cannot do what you want with your body because it's not your body, it's my body, and I want to use it like my puppet. And so he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him that your body is the primary means for the fulfillment of my purpose. And then he got very, very old, and this is the bhajan kutir. Bhajan kutir means when someone gets very old, and they're just chanting, waiting for transfer to the spiritual world. And a lot of times they'll go into the bhajan kutir and they'll not even come out again. But Sanatan, you know, he was living under a different tree every night. He was scorched by the heat in the summer, chilled by the cold in the winter. So Madan Gopal inspired the local people to build him a little shelter in his old age. And that's the shelter right there. When he got to be 90 years old, he was still going 25 kilometers a day around Govardhan. He was still doing it at the age of 90. And Madan Gopal brought him a little Giriraj Shila. It's a stone from Govardhan. It's a Govardhan stone. And he said to Sanatan, he said, you're old and I don't want you to go all the way around 25 kilometers every day. I'm giving you, this represents me. This represents Govardhan. And so you just go around this every day. And I think there's a picture. There's a picture right there. See the little sila, the little stone there with the painted eyes and the turban? You see it right in the center of the banner there? That's the sila, Giri Govardhan sila. And that's a stone from Govardhan. And stones from Govardhan are actually worshipable. But this one was given to him by Krishna. So that's the sila. He said, just go around this every day and you'll be fine. So in 1554, Chaitanya left in, what did you say, 1533? What was it?
33.
Yeah, 1533. So in 1554, which is 21 years after Lord Chaitanya left, Lord Chaitanya was 48 when he left the planet. Sanatan Goswami left in 1554, and he had been the leader of the whole Vaishnav community, which was quite large, in the hundreds if not thousands. And he was the acknowledged leader of the entire Vaishnav community. And if they hadn't already shaved their heads when he departed, everyone shaved their heads. And his samadhi mandir, as we mentioned before, most people opt for cremation. Ordinary people's bodies are cremated. But the exception is great saints, because they're engaged 24/7 in the service of the Lord. Their bodies are holy. And they're often interred, and there's a little memorial built over them. So his samadhi mandir, his little memorial, is in the Madan Mohan temple. And on that day, the day that Sanatan Goswami left, on the anniversary of that day, every year, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Literally tens of thousands of people circumambulate Govardhan Hill on that day. On any given day, hundreds of people circumambulate, but on that day, thousands and thousands of people commemorating. So these are some of his works. All the Goswamis were prolific writers. And you can imagine, in those days, they didn't have any computer, they didn't have any word processors, they didn't have any Gutenberg press. Next week, when we talk about Rupa Goswami, we're going to mention the story about Rupa Goswami, that he would write on one palm leaf, page one, and then while it was drying, he would write page three. By that time, page one would, then he would turn it over, write page two, and write page four. And in this way, they wrote many, many, many hundreds of books. So he wrote the Digdarshani commentary on the Hari Bhakti Vilas. He wrote Vridhad Vaishnava commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. One book which is lost, which he wrote, was Lila Stava. Vridhad Bhagavatamrita is the one for which he's very famous, and we have it downstairs in the bookstore. It's a big, big volume. Part one has to do with Narada searching for the greatest bhaktis, going all over the universe, trying to find out who's on the purest level of devotion. And part two is the odyssey of a devotee named Gopal Kumar searching for the most perfect form of Krishna and the highest place of Krishna's pastimes. That's called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatan Goswami's points in this book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, I think we have this very same volume downstairs. He said that, just like I was saying, between friends, it's a higher degree of intimacy if you insult each other. So he's saying Madhurya eclipses Aishwarya. Aishwarya is awe and reverence. People who worship God in awe and reverence, they treat him like a great king. And that's okay for a certain stage. But when one gets to a higher stage of intimacy, God actually becomes your equal. And you can quip with him. You can make jokes and you can go back and forth with him. just like Radharani does. And it says Krishna enjoys the criticisms, the biting remarks of Radharani more than the reverent hymns of the Vedas. He enjoys that repartee, that back and forth, you know, zip zap, tit for tat. He enjoys that. He relishes that more than he does everyone just reciting great hymns and so on and so forth. And when he's in a relationship, either as son or as friend or as a lover, he's not thinking he's God. He's not thinking he's God. That would spoil the whole mood of it. He's just thinking, I'm Mother Yashoda's son. I'm Radharani's lover. I'm Sudama's friend. He enters fully into that because that's what enables him to feel love. If he thought, or if the subjects thought that he was God, if they were aware of that, then love would be hampered. Love would be inhibited. So Krishna is all about love. He's a love addict. Love is stronger than Krishna. Nothing is stronger than God. But love, the love of his devotees, is stronger. And God can't live without it. He's addicted for it. And that's why every one of us can hope very strongly. We don't have any qualifications. We don't have any devotion. We don't have any knowledge. We don't have anything. But still, we know the nature of God is that he wants to always expand his loving influence, his loving pastime. So he's more eager to have us back in the spiritual world than we are to go there. So we can always hope, not because of what we are, but because of what and who we know Krishna is. So that's it. His love for his devotees more than love for himself. His love is never satiated. He wants infinitely to love and to be loved. So actually, Krishna himself, in order to bring in the book, and this is considered autobiographical, Sanatan Goswami's guru in Vrindavan was someone named Jayant. Wait a minute, let's see. Gopa. So in his search for the highest form of Krishna and the highest love, in the book, Gopa Kumar takes birth in Vrindavan and Krishna becomes his guru because Krishna wants him back. So Krishna just incarnates as his guru, Jayant, and basically brings him back home, back to God. And this is Krishna and Gopa Kumar embracing in the spiritual world when he's come back to Goloka Vrindavan. So that same scenario is said to be biographical, that Sanatan Goswami, actually, his guru was God. It was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by grace of Lord Chaitanya, Sanatan went back to the spiritual world. And it's interesting, too, as a verification of what I was saying, that God lives for love, that when Gopa Kumar goes back and he's reunited with Krishna after being in the material world for many births and he finally comes back, they both faint. They both faint often. They embrace and they faint. And Gopa Kumar comes to sooner. When Gopa Kumar comes to, Krishna is still unconscious on the ground. And Gopa Kumar has to kind of shake him. Krishna, Krishna, wake up. You know, no, he wouldn't do that, but maybe sprinkle a little rose water or something like that. So attain not Bhagavan, but prema, for it attracts Bhagavan. So Sanatan Goswami's writings premise that it's not that we're trying to get to Krishna. All we have to do is to work on ourselves how to love Krishna by serving him, by chanting his holy name, attending arti, taking prasadam, how I can cultivate prema within myself. We don't have to try independently for Krishna. We have to just try for pure love of Krishna. And attaining that, Krishna cannot stay away. Krishna cannot stay away. If you bait a hook with what the fish's favorite food, you don't have to worry about, you know, throwing the hook to where the fish is. You just put it in the water. The fish will find it. He'll find it because that's his favorite food. His intent is out for that. So Krishna is always attracted to prema, and prema never satiates. In this way, the Lord performs ever new pastimes for his devotees. How to attain the mercy of Krishna? Some do it by doing sadhana. That's what we do. All the practices that our spiritual master gave us, chanting, taking prasadam, rising early, these are the practices of sadhana. And that means if you don't have spontaneous love for Krishna, you act on that platform and it'll come. Just like a woman who gets married in the traditional Indian society maybe 100 years ago, the bride and groom would have never met each other before the marriage ceremony. And then she goes to his home the next day, and it's like, who is this guy? You know, he's just he's a stranger, you know. And so there's no intimacy, there's no friendship. Everything is taught. It's taught how to act. It's all formalities and etiquette. But after they, go through this for some time, eventually they develop a feeling for each other. They develop affection, they develop friendship. But at first, it's all very mechanical. But by doing the mechanics, the real feeling comes later. And then ultimately they have a child, which is a product of their love. So sadhana means doing the mechanics by which pure love comes about. Some people get it without doing the sadhana. Some people get it without doing, they just get what's called the causeless mercy of the Lord. Like the Kaliya snake in Krishna Leela. You know, he was born a snake. I mean, what did you do in your past life to be born as a snake? Probably nothing very good. He was born as a snake. He was poisoning the Unamuna River. He was poisoning Krishna's associates. He was poisoning the foliage. And yet Krishna danced on his heads and imprinted his heads with Krishna's lotus feet. So everyone's wondering, all the sages were scratching their heads like, what did that snake do to get that kind of mercy? You know, I don't know what it was. Well, maybe it was just causeless mercy. So you can get it through sadhana, or sometimes you might get it through causeless mercy. It says sometimes sometimes you give ready-made food to some people, and some people give provisions. So we're more like the ones that get provisions, and then we make our own meal. We didn't get the ready-made spontaneous love. Kirtan is superior to smaranam. That means chanting is... Smaranam is a special process of just remembering the pastimes of Krishna. Many of the Goswamis did smaranam bhajanam, and that means they just remembered the pastimes of Krishna. But that's a very, very exalted platform. For most people, just sit down, chant the holy names of Krishna, concentrate on the sound vibration of Krishna's names, and don't fancy yourself to be a greater devotee than we are. The images and the visions will come later. They shouldn't be forced. But the Goswamis, they were chanting out loud, they were doing kirtan, but they would actually for hours and hours be able to just enter into the pastimes of Krishna and be there as a participant, and that's called smaranam. But actually, kirtan is considered superior to that for most people. Well, I guess that concludes our slideshow. I was wondering how we could fit it all in a half an hour, and it's been about 45 minutes, I think.